And we're holding on Pehei Omid Bey is about the middle of the wide lines. The line begins to Esha. We learned yesterday, we're in the middle of a piece of Agadta going through various stories of the Chachamim. So by digressing from one topic to another, we had talked about the greatness of Reb Chiya, Kamek Doy L'Maaseh Chiya, that he worked throughout his whole life to spread Torah throughout Eretz Yisrael, the whole story over there where he would gather together groups of children and teach them Chumashim and teach them Chumash and Mishnayos using scrolls that he himself had prepared from beginning to end. So now the Gemara continues with more stories to illustrate for us something of the greatness of Reb Chiya. So the Gemara says, Omer Rav Chaviva bar Surmut. Rav Chaviva says that Rav Chaviva bar Surmuti had told them the following: Chozi le'ahumin abonon, that he in turn, Rav Chaviva bar Surmuti, had seen one of the Chachamim, Davashchiach al Yohu Gabei, where the Yohu would regularly, the Yohu Anovi would regularly visit this Talmid Chacham. So this is now the story is being heard. Is being heard secondhand, and now Rav Chaviva is reporting it to us, and it's being written in the Gemara. The Tzafra Habu Shapiran Eine. In the morning, his eyes look normal; they looked good. Ulaurta, and then that evening, Damian Kedemiklin Menura, his eyes looked like they had been burnt in fire. Amri Le Mai Hai. So I asked him what happened. Well, Omali. So he tells me like this: Da Amri Le Eliyahu. I asked Eliyahu Anavi, Achvi Li Rabbanan. He saw the Masivta Derakia. Show me the Chachamim as they're going up to Masivta Derakia. So we're going to have Masivta Derakia in a different context soon in the Gemara. Masivta Derakia is in Hebrew it would be translated as Yeshiva Shalmaila. It is exactly that. It's the Yeshiva in Shemayim where the neshamas of the tzaddikim of the people who learned Torah in while they were alive, where they now have a chance to learn Torah on a much higher level in Gan Eden. A maamar in Lakota Torah that we'll refer to soon talks about the point that specifically Masivta Derakia refers to where they're able to achieve very, very high levels of Keser and Chochmah and Bina, to be able to understand to be able to understand things on a whole different level than they did before. There's a number of places where it talks about the number of places, for example, where the Rabbeim talked about how such and such, how a certain halacha that we learn in a that we learn in a in a as referring to physical matters in this world, in the Masivta Derakia, they have a completely different perspective on it. Anyway, so now it's also Masivta Derakia is also identified with Gan Eden Ha'Elyon. In any case, so now this Talmud Chacham says, I want to see the Chachamim as they're going up from Gan Eden HaTachton to Gan Eden Ha'Elyon as they're reaching these undreamed of levels in connecting to Hashem and then the Chachma of Torah. Omali, so the Yo tells him, fine, you'll be able to look at any of them. With the exception of, you should not look at the guharka of Reb Chiya. Rashi over here translates guharka as katedra, which means something like a fancy chair. Earlier in an earlier perek where we also had the word katedra, Rashi where we had the word guharka, Rashi explained it over there as something more like a litter, which is where a person is carried around in public. By several people carrying him. So of course it could be both. It could be like a chair like that that's placed on a platform that's placed on poles like that, and a person is carried around. Anyway, don't look at the one of Reb Chiya. The Lord Stackel Bay, him you should not look at, because he's on such a high ruchniistical level that you're going to be badly affected. So the Talmud Chacham asks, "Ma'isimenaihu?" So how do I tell the difference? How do I know when it's Reb Chiya's when it's Reb Chiya's guharka not to look? So he tells him, "Bekulo azli malachi kisalki v'nachsi." With all the other ones, malachim accompany them when they're going up to the Masivta Derakia, and later on when they come back down. So their whole journey has to be accompanied and mediated by malachim. Lavami guharka de Reb Chiya deminafshe solik v'nochis, but Reb Chiya's guharka, Reb Chiya himself is on such a high level, he can go up and down on his own. He doesn't need malachim to accompany him. Tardas Chaim explains the idea behind it is that Reb Chiya is so important that the Shechina itself accompanies his chariot, and therefore he doesn't need malachim to help him. And that's also why Eliyahu is telling him, just like we find, Kilo Yirani, Adam Bachoy, a person can't look directly at the Shechina, the same way don't look directly at Rabchia's vehicle. So this Talmud Chacham tells, Loi Matsoi L'Ukmei Anafshoi, I couldn't hold myself back, Istakli Bei, and when Rav Chiya was going up, I was looking at him as well. Also, Tshei Butiti Denura, two sparks of fire came and shot out, Omach Yuhu La'ahu Gavra, and struck that person, meaning me, V'saminu La'enei, and blinded his eyes, and blinded my eyes. L'Mochar, continues the Talmud Chacham, the next day, Azle Ishtatli Am'arte, the next day I went, and prostrated himself to Davin by the cave where Rav Chiya is buried. Amina, I said, Masniyos de Mar Masnena. I learned the brises of my Rebbe. Meaning, in other words, you, Rav Chiya, put together a collection of brises, which are quoted in many places throughout Shas, and I learned those Mishnayos, so therefore that schus should stand in my good stead, that I shouldn't be permanently affected by what I did. In fact, Marsha adds the idea when you learn the Torah of a Talmud Chacham who passed away, as we know, his lips move in the grave. Therefore, this Talmud Chacham is saying to Rav Chiya, I'm giving you that accomplishment of Sifsoisav Dovas Bakever, so please help me. And I was healed. So now, why did Chaviv of Arsumaki see his eyes red? Tosfos brings two possibilities: either this Talmud Chacham told it to him before, in between, after he had seen Rav Chiya's Guharka, but before he had gone to daven about it, which would explain why he saw it in the evening, but meaning because it says only the next day did he go to prostrate himself. Or Tosfos's first explanation is that even afterwards there was still a scar of it visible for a while, and therefore his eyes looked burnt, but he was able to see again at least. Another story that illustrates the greatness of Rav Chiya. Eliyahu habashlich b'masiv to the Rebbe. Eliyahu Hanavi used to regularly visit Rebbe's yeshiva. One time it was Rosh Chodesh, Noga Levelay Osa, and it got late in the day, and Elio still hadn't shown up. Omale, so when he finally did come, Rebbe asked him, my time in Noga Levelamar, Rebbe Elio Anavi, how come you're late? Omale, so Elio tells him, Adu Kimna La Avraham, because on Rosh Chodesh I'm extra busy. I have to wake up Avraham Avinu, because Tzadikim and Misosim, Kurim Chaim, so we can speak of the others as not actually dead, they're only sleeping. So I have to wake him up with Mashina Yada, and I wash his hands, just like you do when a person wakes up from sleeping, he washes Negovasu the same way. I have to wash Eliyahu's hands the same way. I have to wash Avraham Avinu's hands, Negovasu, Umatzli, and then he davens to Hashem, Umagninale, and then I put him back down to rest. And v'chein liYitzchak v'chein liYaakov, in the same way Yitzchak and the same way Yaakov. So it takes me time, and that's why I was late. So Rebbe asked him, v'lukminu bahadi adadi, why do you do, you have to take time to put each one back, to wake each one up separately and to put each one to sleep separately, just do them all at once, at least that way. You'll for sure the time it takes to wash them negovas, so you can do one after the other. And then the same thing with the other things, you'll save time. So Leo answers him, savri, because in the yeshiva shomayla, in the based in shomayla, they figure, let's not do that. Takbi Barachmi, the three of them all together, are going to be so tremendously powerful in davening for Rachman from Hashem, or Maisel Mashiach below Zimne, and they're going to wind up bringing Mashiach before his time, before Avodah Saburim is over, whatever. And therefore, I can't have them daven the three together. So why is that only a concern on Rosh Chodesh? So Marsha points out that on Rosh Chodesh is of the tefillah, some of the tefillah, in particular, the Rosh Chodesh represents that the Jewish people are going to be renewed, like we say in Kiddush Levana, Shem Asidim, L'Ischadish Kamoy, so that the Jewish people will be renewed like the moon is renewed every month. So therefore, Rosh Chodesh is particularly a time to daven for the renewal of the Jewish people with Mashiach, and therefore Eliyahu is saying they wouldn't allow me to wake them up the three together, because then on Rosh Chodesh, their tefillahs would be extra effective for that. Omalei, so Rebbe asked him, Yeshdug Mosin Ba'olam Hazer, is there anybody like that in Olam Hazer? Is there anybody of that caliber in Olam Hazer where also the tefillos are so powerful that that they would be able to bring that they would be able to bring Mashiach? Omalei Iker Reb Chiya Obanu. So Reb Chiya tells him, yes, you have Reb Chiya and his sons. We find in a number of places in Shas, Reb Chiya had two twin sons named Yehuda and Chizkiah. And yes, they're as powerful in that regard as the others. So the Gemara says, Goza Rebbe Tanisa. So the next time Rebbe had occasion to declare a fast, whether because there was a drought or whether because whatever kind of thing, for which in Gemara Tainis it describes reason to declare public fasts. Now the Mishnayos and Tainis describe over there how there comes a point during the fasts when you have a special seder of tefillah and you have and you need particularly a chazan to daven over there who meets a lot of different qualifications. So Rebbe brought down in front of the Amud Reb Chiya and his sons. Tosfos refers to a medrash that says that when it comes to a Tainis Tzibur, you have three people davening by the Amud. We find by the war with Amalek at the end of Parashas Beshalach that you have Moshe and Aaron and Chur all together over there. So we learn from that paradigm that on such a Tainis Tzibur, you have three people davening together. We say, by the way, the Gemara mentions in Tainus, Ein Tainus Tzibur B'Bavel, the concept of a Tainus Tzibur with those details does not apply in Bavel or any place where there are no Chachamim with the original Smicha Ish Mipiyish, which is why nowadays we have that. The only fasts that we do anything like a Tainus Tzibur described there in the Gemara are Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. There is actually, when we do Kol Nidre, the minhag is that you have two people stand next to the Chazan when he's doing Kol Nidre, and that's based on this idea of having three people together. So they're davening by the Yomud. Oma Mashiva Ruach. When they said Mashiva Ruach, then right away Hashem answered their tefillah of a Noshva Zika, and right away a wind started blowing. Oma Morid Ageshem, and he continued with Morid Ageshem, but also in Mitra, and immediately the rain came. The Gemara mentions in Tainus several other Chachamim of that caliber as well, who right away they would daven, and right away the rain would fall. But so here we're saying that Reb Chiya and his sons also had that. When they get to the end of the bracha and they're going to finish Machaya Hamesim, Rogash Alma, the world was there was a trembling in the world, as in the noise, the sound of bones coming together to reform skeletons. Marsha refers to, we have in the story of the dry bones that Yechezkel saw and that Hashem told him to revive. You have a similar thing. The first stage is you have the bones are scattered all over the valley over there. And Hashem tells him, say in Nevuah, that they're going to come together. And the first thing is there's a huge noise and clattering as the bones knit back together. So the same way over here, there was that, as in there's about to be Tchias HaMesim. Amri Berkiah. So they said in Shemayim, they said it. So in other words, so their tefillah was so powerful that it really was, as Eliyahu HaNavi said, it's able to accomplish Tchias HaMesim. Tosfos actually wonders, what about you have Tchias HaMesim is mentioned earlier in that bracha as well. And then comes Mashiv Ruach Morid Ageshem. So why didn't this happen when they said Mechaya Mesim Atarav Lo Yishiyah? So Tosfos says a couple of things. First of all, because Tchias HaMesim happens only through Tal. You have the famous Tal, the famous dew that Hashem is going to revive the Mesim with, and that's mentioned so only after the point in the bracha where that would be mentioned, where, fine, this was during the winter, so they say Mashiv Ruach Morid Ageshem, but otherwise, that's the time in it when we would say Tal, so therefore, so only after that does the words Mechaya Mesim have this power. And also Tosfos says, because when we talk about Mashiv Ruach Morid Ageshem, that's the main thing, that's the main place where we mention that concept, as opposed to when we say Mechaya Mesim Rachamim Rab, when we say Mechaya Mesim Atarav Lo Yishiyah, in that bracha, that's kind of only incidental. The main thing is when we say Baruch Atah Hashem Mechaya HaMesim. So again, there was this clattering, and it looks like Tchias HaMesim is about to happen. Amri Barakia, so they said in Shemayim, Man Goli Razir Ba'alma, who revealed the secret in the world, who spilled the beans and told Rebbe that Reb Chiya and his sons have such power? Amri, so they answered back, Eliyahu. Asyu al Eliyahu, so they brought Eliyahu, Machyu Shitin Posid Nura, and they gave him in Shemayim 60 lashes of fire. Marsha points out why Dafka 60 is like this, based in Shamata, when they give Malchus, they give 39. That corresponds to when is a person first chayev in Onshin in based in Shamata is when he's 13 years old. Before that, he's not punishable. So therefore, they give him 3 Malchus for each year. So therefore, 3 times 13. Meanwhile, in Shamayim, a person is punished only when he's 20 years old. Therefore, 20 times 3 is 60. So therefore, they do specifically 60 posi dinura. Anyway, so now, and they're telling Eliyahu, now you have to go and undo what you did. Also, idmi lahu kedurba dinura. So Eliyahu came and appeared to them like a bear of fire, ol beinayu, and he came between them while they were davening over there. But taudinu, and he distracted them, and then therefore, so now they don't have the same kavana, the same degree of kavana in davening that they did before, and therefore tchias amesim did not in fact happen over there. What's the significance of him coming like a bear? Marsha explains that the Persians we find in Psukim and we find in various places in the Gemara are compared to bears. So in other words, the symbolism is it's not time for the Gaula yet. You're still going to be for a while under the domination of the bear under the Persian Empire, which not long after that conquered Babel. And then the majority of Jews in the world, or at least a substantial number of Jews in the world for the next few hundred years, lived under the domination of the Persians. Another story involving Talmid Chachamim, and it also connects with the fact that we said before there was this Talmid Chacham whose eyes had been burnt and then were healed. So now the Gemara tells us another story involving the healing of eyes. Shmuel Yavchina, Shmuel, the lunar expert. This is the Amora Shmuel from throughout Shas. He was called Yavchina, the expert in the moon, because he was. He was an expert in astronomy. We find mention of that in a few places in Shas. And in particular, he was an expert in knowing how to calculate the moon's visibility, which is, of course, very important to know when Rosh Chodesh is going to be and when the Yom Tovim are going to be. Anyway, Asya de Rebbe Hava, he was for a period of time Rebbe's doctor. So one time Rebbe's eye was hurting him. This also connects with, actually, we had before. We had on Pei Dalet and Pei Hei about the Yisurim of Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Shimon, and then about the Yisurim of Rebbe with various diseases. So this is another type of Yisurim of Rebbe. So he had an eye infection or something. So Shmuel tells him, let me put some medicine in your eye, some drops in your eye. So Rebbe says, I can't. I'm too delicate. My eyes are hurting too much to do that. So Shmuel says, Eshta l'chamishter. Fine, I'll rub some ointment on the outside of your eye. And again, Rebbe tells him, I can't. Have a moisiv lebegufsa the samoni tuse beisadye. So Shmuel came up with an idea. He put a tube full of the medicine that was needed for Rebbe's eyes under Rebbe's pillow. And the fumes of it were so strong that they penetrated through the pillow and penetrated all the way through Rebbe's skull. So when Rebbe would be lying over there at night with his head on the pillow, the effect of the medicine would be able to go all the way through to his eyes, the itasi, and Rebbe was cured. Have a comet star, Rebbe lemismachay. So now, after that, Rebbe really wanted to give Shmuel smicha. And then smicha, of course, he's so smart, he's so wise. He wanted to give him smicha, as we know that smicha would have various things. It would mean he would be called Rebbe from now on. Would mean he'd be able to judge dinik knosis and so on and so forth. So he wanted to do that. So v'loy having mistaya milsa, but it wasn't working out. Rashi says either Ashon the Terefes, it was a dangerous time. It might have been a time of Xerus or something, even though usually we say that Rebbe's times was peaceful, but nevertheless, there might have been some particular thing that came up that distracted them. Or Rashi says they may not have been able to gather all the Chachamim together to give Smicha. They would have a large gathering of the Chachamim, even though technically you only need 3. Either way, it wasn't working out. So Rebbe is not able to accomplish that. So he was feeling bad about it. So Shmuel tells him, Rebbe, don't feel bad. I personally saw the Sefer of Odom Arishon. The Medrash tells us that when Hashem first created Adam Rishon, he showed him, as the Gemara mentions, that Hashem showed him dur v'doshav, dur v'chachamav. That Hashem showed Adam a list of every generation and the Talmid Chachamim and the leaders and the Darshanim who are going to be in that generation. So therefore, so Shmuel is saying, I saw that. And it says in that sefer, Shmuel Yachina, Chakim Yiskiri V'Rebi Lo Yiskiri. Shmuel Yachina, which is me, will be called Chacham, he'll be called wise, V'Rebi Lo Yiskiri, but he will not be called Rebbe, which means that he won't get smicha. V'Asu De Rebbe Al Yodri Tehei, and Rebbe's healing will take place through him. So therefore, Shmuel is saying, I can see in that sefer of Adam Rishon that I'm not going to be given smicha, so don't bother yourself about it, because it's obviously Min HaShemayim. Other things that are in that book, the Gemara quotes something else from that book that Hashem showed Adam. Rebbe v'Rab Nosson Soif Mishnah. Rebbe and Rab Nosson are the end of the Mishnah. Meaning, Rashi says, so they're the end of the Tanoim. So Rashi describes up until that point, every Talmid Chacham, every Chacham, every Tana would teach. Where he would teach Torah and the Beis Medrash, each one had their own style of saying it. They didn't necessarily have a fixed text of Mishnayos. Now, we do have in many places, it comes out, that there were many fixed Mishnayos by that point, but still, there was a lot of variation in how people taught Mishnayos and how people taught the halachos. Rebbe gathered them all together in a Seder, where afterwards, Rashi finishes off that afterwards only a little bit is added. You have a couple of places in the Mishnah where they added things in the generation after Rebbe, because you have the generation over there that was transitional between the Tanoim and Amiroim. You have, for example, at the end of Masech the Uktzin, it mentions Rabbi Shurban Levi, who was generally considered to be an Amora. You have, for example, Perek Vav or Pirkei Avos, which was added to Mishnayos, which is really a collection of Brises. But basically, the Mishnah, as we have it, was organized by Rebbe. So they did in fact have known collections of Mishnayos before that. But still, what was considered a Mishnah and what was not was a little bit flexible. And Rebbe made it that now this is how it is. These are the Mishnayos, and there's no changes to that. So that's their accomplishment as far as the Mishnah. Rav Ashi and Ravina Sof Hora, and Rav Ashi and Ravina are the end of Hora, which means they're the end of the period of Amiroi. So Rashi explains again what it means is, so now you have this Mishnah, which is the basic halachas, then there's Gemara, which is the analysis of those halachas. So now, up until Ravina and Rav Ashi's times, again, in every yeshiva, they would ask a question about what this Mishnah means or where it gets the din from or whatever, and they would discuss it. And the same way, when a case came up and they needed to pass in the halacha, then they'd pass in the halacha. So now Ravina and Ravashi gathered all that material together and put it in a seder where now it's called Hora because the Gemara is ultimately you can't pass in halacha directly from the Mishnah. The Gemara points out because you have many cases where Mishnah will say something and it turns out once we analyze it in the Gemara, it's only a das yachid or it applies only in certain situations, etc. So therefore, on the other hand, you can pass in from the Gemara. We can't nowadays because we're too far removed from it. But the Rishonim did just that. They would analyze the Gemaras and pass in the Gaonim, and the Rishonim would do just that. They would pass in directly from the Gemara, and therefore the Gemara can be called Soif, and therefore the Gemara is called Hira, and Ravashi and Ravina are the end of that period. Actually, Dodas Rishonim points out there's really two Ravinas meant over here. There was an uncle Ravina and then there was a nephew Ravina. The uncle was a chaver of Rav Ashi, and we find him in many places in Shas. And then there was a Talmud of Rav Ashi, also named Ravina, who was a nephew of the first one. When he passed away, and there's different opinions whether he passed away in the year Reish Lamed Vav or Reish Samach, which corresponds on the secular calendar to 475 or 499, respectively, then that was the official end of the period of the Gemara. After that, again, just like with the Mishnah, they added a little bit. After that, there was a short period called Rabbanan Sivuroi, where they were still allowed to make certain editorial additions to the Gemara, which we have here and there. There's a few places in Shas that the Rishonim identify as having been added by the Rabbanan Sivuroi. But anyway, so Ravina and Rav Ashi, meaning in a sense, the first Ravina as well as the second Ravina, between them, they conclude the period of the Gemara. There is a very interesting point in that regard that we're calling Gemara Hora. There's a point that the Chazon Ish makes about it in a number of places in his writings, that the implication of it is also that is when when the Gemara was finished is when the period of the transmission of Torah Shebaal Peh came to an end, meaning after that, we have what's in the Mishnah and the Gemara and the Midrashim and so forth, and we can analyze it and delve into it and whatever, but we can't reveal new things in Torah Shebaal Peh that weren't there before. And he says, among other things, that has implications, an example of an implication in that of halacha is we have in Hilchos Treifos, we have certain kinds of conditions that might happen to an animal where halacha considers it to be that's incurable, and therefore that the animal is treif. Now, some of those conditions nowadays, they might well be able to cure them. Nevertheless, the halacha still remains that they're treif, and vice versa, that Amman points out. You can have something which nowadays is considered fatal to an animal, but the Gemara does not. And the reason is because how it's decided is established based on how it was done during this period of Hora, during this period of the Gemara. And after that, there's no changing that, even though medical knowledge and maybe even the facts on the ground have changed. Sometimes we say, for example, in the Shtanu Ativim, that people's natures have changed. Nevertheless, halacha is fixed according to how it was at that time, because that's what it means, soif hora. Anyway, the simonach, the Gemara says, a simon to remember that Ravina and Rav Ashi are the end of hora, is a posik and tilim. Ad ovo yal mikdashay kale, until I come to the sanctuaries, to the Beis Hamikdash of Hashem, of vino la'acharisam, I would understand their end. So mikdashay, the end of the word mikdashay is like the name Ashi, very possible, by the way, and I've seen it punctuated this way in some places, is that the name is really Rav Ashay, or Oshay. It may even be short for the name Osher. So therefore, the Shay of Mikdashay evokes that Shay of the name of Ashay, and Avina represents Ravina, because in fact Ravina is short for Reb Avina. So the Pasuk is saying, Ad Ovoy, until I come, Lach Risam, to the end of them, representing, in other words, that they're the end of the that they're the end of the period of the Gemara. Marshall also adds the point, in other words, that in each pair, Rav Nosson lived actually a generation before Rebbe. So when we say Rebbe and Rav Nosson are the end of the Mishnah, we mean, in other words, that Rav Nosson began that process and Rebbe completed it. The same way over here, Ravina, the first Ravina, that is slightly older than Rav Ashi. Therefore, again, we mentioned Ravina and then Rav Ashi, and we also have, again, there's the second Ravina who was after Rav Ashi. So that's what it is. Actually, Ravina, the second Ravina, Rav Ashi was older than him. Rav Ashi was his Rebbe. So therefore, Lacharisam, Avina, Lacharisam, Avina, meaning Ravina, is the last one. So again, you have a lot of implications in that. For example, the fact that we say that the Gemara is Soif Hora. Among other things, it means this is why we generally paskin like the Bavli against the Yerushalmi, because the Yerushalmi was finished before they stopped writing it anyway, before this period of Soif Hora, so therefore they're still able to come up, the Chachamim in Bavel are still able to come up with new halachas and new opinions to contradict it, whereas the Bavli, there's nothing later than it. Okay. Talking about since we were talking about the greatness of Rav Chiya and how he worked hard to spread Torah, so now the Gemara tells a story with Rabbah of how he was Moser Nefesh, of how he also spread Torah tremendously, and that brought about a persecution that led to his passing away. Omer Rav Kahana, Ishtoili Rav Choma Bar Brate D'Chasa. Rav Choma, the grandson of Chasa, or Dechoma is a different Gersa, told me the following story. Rabba Bar Nachmeni, Agav Shmoda Noch Nafshe. Rabba Bar Nachmeni, this is the Amora Rabba from throughout Shas, passed away in the course of a Shmad, of a Gzera from the king. From the king. Now, usually Shmad would be a more general Gzera to outlaw Yiddishkeit entirely, Rachman Lutzlan. Here, as we're going to see in the story, it wasn't that, but nevertheless, it was an individual gzera against him, but it was against his yeshiva, that he shouldn't be gathering Jews together to learn to teach Torah, and therefore that can be called a shema. What happened was Ochlo Bekurza Bemalka. They informed on him to the government. The word Ochli Bekurza is the Aramaic expression for saying Lashon Hara. There's a Rashi in Parshas Kedoshim that explains at some length why that expression is used, and the Ramban there gives a different explanation. Anyway, it's the Aramaic equivalent of the Bemalshim. Now, by the way, the Gemara mentions in other places that their Rabba used to, he was the Rosh Hashiva in Pumbedissa. There were many, the Gemara tells us in Tcholin that there were many dishonest people in Pumbedissa, so you can be sure that they didn't like Rabba for the fact that he's trying to, that he's working to maintain standards of Yiddishkeit and standards of honesty over there. In fact, there's Gemara, I think, on Shabbos, where Abaya asked Rabba, nobody in town likes you of all the townspeople. When you pass away, what's going to be as far as your hesped? And he tells him, you know what, it's enough that I have you and Rabba Bar and Rava Bar Chanan, my loyal Talmidim, as long as you realize that the what you're missing when I pass away, and you give a hesped, then I don't care what everybody else in town thinks. Anyway, so apparently one of these people is the one who went in Malshanar. Omru, so these people said, Ika chad gavu b'yehudoi, there's a man among the Jews, to come avato treisa alfa gavu m'yisrael, yarcha b'kaita b'yarcha b'sitwa, m'kairga n'malka. He's preventing 12,000 Jewish men for 1 month during the summer and 1 month during the winter from paying royal taxes. Meaning, Rashi explains, people would gather to Rabba's Beis Medrash in Nisan and in Tishrei to learn Droshus about to hear Rabba Darshan about the Yom Tovim. So now the king's officials would go around to collect their people's head tax. They would come around, Rashi describes, every month and collect the head tax for that month. And these people aren't home, so therefore they would evade taxes. So these people are claiming to the king that Rabba is causing 12,000 people for 2 months every year to evade their taxes. And yeah, the Gemara mentions elsewhere that Rabba had in his Beis Medrash only 200 full-time Talmidim, but here we're talking about the rest of the ones who would come only in Nisan and Tishrei. Anyway. A shudder pristika de Malka Basre. So the government sent a policeman to go and find him and arrest him. The loy ashkeche, and he couldn't find him because orak va'ozum with Pumbedissa la'agra. Rabba went and ran away from Pumbedissa, which is where he was the Rosh Hashiva, to Akra. Ome Akra la'agma, ome Agma la'shchin, ome Shchin la'tzrifa, ome tzrifa la'ena demayim, ome ena demayim la'Pumbedissa. And finally, he figured that it's safe enough to return. So in any case, he returned to Pumbedissa. But Pumbedissa ashkeche, and that shliach actually found him in Pumbedissa. What happened? Ikla pristika de malkala hu shpiza de Rabba. That royal messenger came to the same inn where Rabba was staying. Rabba had come back to Pumbedissa. He didn't yet get back. He didn't yet go back home. So he was staying in some inn in the town. This shliach of the king was also there. They brought a plate of food in front of him. Tak actually means a little table like they used to have in those times where everybody would have their own little personal table in front of them. They gave this guy two cups of wine to drink. The dayur, the tak, and the kamei, and then they removed the table. Now, the Gemara tells us in Psachim at great length that when a person drinks zugos, when a person drinks or eats in pairs and even numbers, then he becomes susceptible to injury by shade. The Gemara over there doesn't give a reason. Different Rishonim offer different reasons for why that's so. In any case, so now he was attacked by Shadim. His face was turned backwards because the Shadim attacked him. Omrule, so the people in charge of the inn asked Rabba, my Nevedle, what should we do about him? Gavra de Malku, after all, he's a king's messenger. We can't just leave him like this. Omrulehu, so Rabba tells them, bring back the table in front of him, and give him a third cup to drink, because then he'll have an odd number, and then he'll be free of the influence of Zogas. So sure enough, they did just that, the ifsi, and he was healed. The Gemara in Psachim, in fact, says that's why they had to bring the table back. Otherwise, the two cups that he drank at the table and one without the table would not combine together, and he'd still be under attack by Shadim. Therefore, they had to bring the table back, implying that it's a continuation of his meal, and then the three cups combined together for good. Omar, so now the shliach says, I'm certain that the man I'm looking for must be here in this inn, because he's saying, in other words, that who else would have known to save me like that must be that they're only the great Talmud Chacham Rabba. Bocha Shabbas Reva Ashkechay. So sure enough, he searched the inn and found Omar. So now the shliach says, Azlina Meha, I'm going to leave you now. I'm not going to take you with me as a prisoner. Im mikto kotlulahu gavra, if they threatened to kill me because I came back empty-handed, loy maglina, I'm not going to tell where you are, v'negidin menagdin lay, but if they whip me or torture me, maglina, then I will tell, because I'm not going to be able to withstand that. Find in other places a similar kind of thing. There's a Gemara, for example, in Ksubas that says that Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, if Nebuchadnezzar had whipped them or tortured them, rather than just telling them he's going to throw them into the fiery furnace, they would have bowed down to a statue, because that's much more horror. A person is killed, at least, you know, that's it. They don't feel anything more afterwards, but not this. Anyway, Asiul Kameh, so they brought Rabbah in front of him. Now, if he already found Rabbah and already told him this, why do they have to bring Rabbah in front of him? There's actually a Girsa in Dikduke Sofrim that before, it's not that he found him, it's rather that he threatened that if they don't bring him to him, he's gonna torture them, and now they brought Rabbah to him. So according to that, before he wasn't speaking face to face with Rabbah, just he was saying in general in a way that Rabbah would hear. Anyway. So Ila Idroina, so he brought Rabbah into a room in the inn, particular Baba Ba'ape, and locked the door in front of him. So this way, in other words, like this, he has kind of as an insurance policy. Again, he was saying that if they torture him, he's gonna reveal where Rabbah is. So now he doesn't want, what good is it gonna do if by that time Rabbah runs away? So therefore he locked up Rabbah temporarily. Bo Rachmi, Rabbah Davin for Rachmanis for Hashem, and Porak Ashisa, and this happened, the wall broke open, Orak Bo Ozal Agma, and Rabbah was able to run away and went to a meadow. So now at this point, have a Yosef Agirda Didikula, Rabbah is sitting over there on the stump of a palm tree, the Kagoris, and he's sitting over there and learning Torah about that. At that point, there was an argument going on in the Masivta Dirkiya, the Yeshiva Shalmaila that we talked about before. And Rabbah overheard what's going on. Now you have like this. We know with Saras, the Saras is a white spot on the skin. And one of the simonim that makes it, that it's definitively Saras, and now the person has to tear his clothes and let his hair grow long and be outside the city and so on and so forth, is if white hairs grow in the spot of Saras. So now, so they're arguing in the Masivta Dirakiya on the following question. If the white spot was there before the white hair, tome, then the person is tome, because it means that the hair turned white because of the tzaras. If the white hair was there before, the person gets older, their hair turns white. So now, if afterwards a baheres develops in that area, toher, then he's toher, meaning that those hairs in and of themselves are not a simen tumah. Sofik. What happens when there's a sofik which came first? So now you have machlok. Hakadosh Baruch Hu emet toher v'kulam asivta derekia ami tomei. Hashem Hakadosh Baruch Hu says that he's toher, and the rest of the masivta derekia says that he's tomei. How can the masivta derekia be arguing with Hashem? So different rishonim talk about, for example, that among other things, it might be they said their opinion first, and then afterwards Hashem said his opinion. We're mentioning Hashem's opinion first out of respect, but really they would have said their opinion first. But there's also a lot of possibilities that Rabbi Hananel in fact explains. It doesn't mean Hashem himself. It means you have the group of tzaddikim who are closer to Hashem on a higher level in Gan Eden versus the lower level tzaddikim who are further away. Then you have the Ran explains that yes, of course they know Hashem, what Hashem is saying is correct, but loy b'shamayim he, so therefore they have to go according to their seichel anushi, according to their human logic. And when those chachamim, these same chachamim who now constitute the Masivta Dirakiya, when they were here on earth, they decided with their human seichel that it is tameh because of the suffix, and therefore even though Hashem is saying differently, they're still sticking to their opinion because total loy b'shamayim. There's a long and deep mimer in Likutei Torah where the Alter Rebbe discusses this point and analyzes it in great detail, and there's other mimer chassidus that come from it after that. The Alter Rebbe, among other things, makes the point over there that, again, the Masivta Dirakiya, like we said over there, are the tzaddikim who are on a very high level of understanding of Elikos. They have Keser, Chochma, and Bina. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, meanwhile, represents a level of Elikos. The words Kodesh and Baruch represent different other levels of Alakus. And therefore, so they have an argument over here. What happens in particular when there's a suffix? What does it mean in terms of the chitsonim, in terms of the klippus of tumah being able to leech off of being able to leech off the beheres? The beheres itself represents a high level of a very high level of ruchnios. The hairs represent the ability to for them to parasitize it, like things that attach themselves to the hair. So the machloikas is so it's not so much so the machloikas is basically what perspective to look at it on, whether this is something that the klippas can attach themselves to or not. And he goes on in great length up Ichsidus to explain what each of the sides holds. Anyway, Amri, so they decided man noichach, who should prove it, who should be the one to decide one way or the other. Noichach, Rav Bar Nachmeni, they decided it would be Rav Bar Nachmeni should be the one to decide. De Omer, Rav Bar Nachmeni, ani yochid ben goyim, ani yochid ba'ohalos. Because Rabbi Bar Nachmeni himself says on himself, I am unique in my knowledge of Negoyim and my knowledge of Ohalos, which are complicated areas of Halacha. And here we're talking about Negoyim. So he can be the one to decide this question. Now, how are they going to get him there to decide it? He's here on earth. And again, in that Maimer, the Alter Rebbe makes the point that by saying Yochid ben Goyim and Yochid Ba'olus represents, in other words, that Rabbah has a connection with the Bechlal, the Beheres over there represents Chaya and Yechidah, represents very high levels of the Neshama that are not able to be enclosed in the body. And therefore, Yochid Ba'olus and Yochid ben Goyim represents that he has a special connection with that aspect of Elikus. Anyway. Shadu shlicha basrei, so they sent the malachamavus to bring his neshama. Loi have a motzi malachamavus, the mikra of lei, but the malachamavus couldn't even approach him. Midloi have a kaposik kumi megirsa, because Rabba's mouth was never stopping to learn the whole time. He was learning Torah, and that kept the yetzahara away. I mean the malachamavus away. Adahochi noshav zika, then a wind was blowing, but ovash bene kani, and it was making a noise among the reeds over there in this forest, in this meadow where Rabba was sitting. Sava gunda de parashi, who he heard the noise, he thought it's a troop of soldiers who are coming to arrest him. Omar, so he says, Tenach nafshi dahu gavra, let that person's, meaning myself, let my neshama go in peace and then rest in peace, for you must be yodad machosa, rather than being given over into the hands of the government. So now he's passing away. As he was passing away, Omar, he hears already what they're discussing in the Yeshiva Shamayla, and he calls out, Toher, that it is Toher. Yotzis Baskol v'Omar, a Baskol came out and announced, Ashrecha, Rabbi Bar Nachmeni, Shegufcha Toher, happy are you, Rabbi Bar Nachmeni, your body is Toher, v'yotza nishmascha v'Toher, and your neshama left you with the word Toher. So now, in fact, the interesting thing is the Rambam paskins in Hilchos Tumas Saras, the Rambam paskins that it is, in fact, Tomei, not like Rabbi Bar Nachmeni. So why not? The Kesef Mishnah explains over there, because by the time Rabbah is saying over here, Toher, Toher, his neshama is already leaving his body. He's already half in Shemayim anyway, and Torah Lebe Shemayim. So therefore we follow other rules of passing halacha. We have a Stam Mishnah that says that it's Tom, that it's Toher, that it's Tomei, and then so forth, and therefore Rabba, and therefore the Rambam passings like that. The Chassam Sofer makes another point. How would the Chachamim know of this story anyway if Rabba was alone over there in that meadow? It must be that they were told the whole story of Ruach HaKodesh. Well, then again, then it means, in other words, so they're not finding out the halacha through the normal processes, only through Ruach HaKodesh and Torah Lo B'Shamayim here, and therefore you can't pass him like that. Elsewhere, the Gemara actually brings a pasuk that Rabba uses to prove that it's Tahor, and that's, there's even an explanation over here that's why he says Tahor, Tahor twice, one that there's a svara to say that it's Tahor, and one there's a pasuk. Nevertheless, the halacha is in the end, and then the Alter Rebbe and that Maimer also deals with what that represents, the fact that there's that pasuk, but nevertheless, and why from Hashem's perspective it should be Torah, but nevertheless, from the perspective of the Masivta Derukiya, it's Tomei, and the Rambam ends up passing like that. Anyway, continues the Gemara, Nofo Piskim Rukiya B'Pumbedissa, a note fell from Shemayim in Pumbedissa, which said, Rabbi Bar Nachmeni nisbakish b'yeshiva shamayla. Rabbi Bar Nachmeni has been requested to join the yeshiva shamayla. So now everybody realized that Rabbi had passed away. Nofgu Abaya v'Rava v'chulu Rabbonim le'yisuki bei. So Abaya and Rava and all the other Talmidim and all the other Chachamim came to bury Rabbi. But they didn't know where he's at. They didn't know where he is. Oslo Agma, they came eventually to this meadow. They saw birds are fluttering their wings in the air over there and keeping in one place in the air to form a canopy with their wings. So they said, Shmamina Hosam Hu, that shows Rabba's body must be there, and therefore the birds are staying over there, fluttering with their wings and staying in one place in the air, unlike what they would usually do in order to protect his body from the sun and to show respect for him. So they realize that's where we'll find it's not normal, of course. Birds don't usually do that. So obviously it must be that Rabba's body shouldn't be lying over there in the sun. So they went and found the body, and then they buried it, and then they made a hesped for him. They were crying and mourning for him for 3 days and three nights straight. Nafal piska, then a note fell down from Shemayim. That's not enough. Kala Kurdish, anybody who leaves at this point, Yehei ben Nidui, deserves to be a Nidui. 3 days of hesped is not enough for Rabba. So they continued doing the hesped for the full 7 days of Shiva. Nafal piska, and then another note fell down from Shemayim. L'chul aveis chum l'sholem, go to your houses in peace. Now you've done what you've needed to as covered for Rabba. There is a fascinating and long and detailed explanation from the Malbim at the beginning of Parshas Chukas that brings this Gemara over here, and he explains the symbolism behind it. He explains that there came a point. Rabba is in fact, according to him, the whole thing is a mushal. Rabba is in fact passing away in Pumbedissa, surrounded by his Talmidim. But they see that most of his body is already numb, is already no longer alive. Only his heart, and then they brought him near it, and they're wondering how is such a thing possible. That's represented by him sitting on the stump over there. And he relates this to the whole thing of the tzaras, of the baheres, and the hair over here that you have a person is so divested of their guf that therefore their neshama doesn't even know what's going on with the yisurim of the guf anymore. And then Kodesh Baruch Hu said such a thing as tahor, such a thing as possible. Mesifta Derekiah say it's impossible. We can prove it from Rabbi Bar Nachmani. And he goes and explains the whole thing over there that the Malach Mavis is not able to reach him, but nevertheless he's saying that he finally comes to the point when he feels he's about to pass away, but still his heart is still beating and he still has his vital organs are still functioning and then the Chachamim were saying, we don't know, is this the kind of thing? Are there other? Is it going to be possible for other Chachamim to reach this level as well? And now they the whole thing with the birds, he explains over there what that represents, and now they finally figured, eventually, fine, 3 days, you're mainly crying for the fact that the neshama has separated from the body. The rest of the days of Shiva is you're mourning for the body itself, that's rotting away in the dust. So they thought, Rabbi Bar Nachmani, they thought his chayus of his guf was already gone mostly before he passed away. All that was left was in his neshama. Therefore, they only need 3 days, and therefore Hashem is telling, therefore the note from Shemayim is telling them, no, for him you need full 7 days. You need to mourn for his guf as well. Anyway, continues the Gemara. On the day that Rabba passed away, Dalye Zappa. There was a tremendous storm. There was a tremendous storm wind in the world, showing, in other words, that Hashem is showing, so to speak, that he's upset over the fact. In particular, Marsha says, since on the day Rabba passed away, they didn't make a proper hesped for him, because we're saying they only discovered where his body was afterwards. And the Gemara elsewhere mentions that Hashem is very upset when a Talmid Chacham passes away and they don't do a proper hesped for him. So Hashem showed that in the world by making a terrible storm. The Dori Lahu Taya, it lifted up a Taya, an Arab merchant, he rochib gamla, as this Arab was riding on his camel, by high gisa, then a har papa, he was riding along one side of the river papa, Bashadi Bahach Gisa, and the wind was so strong, it was like a tornado, it picked him up with his camel and put him down, threw him down on the other side of the river. So he asks, what's going on? Amulei, he was told, Minashamayim, maybe people told him, whatever. I mean, he's an Arab, but Bakhtis is not, he's an Arab merchant. He's not necessarily getting messages from Shamayim. So maybe just people told him anyway. Noch nafshi, the Rabbi Bar Nachmeni. Rabbi Bar Nachmeni has passed away, and therefore there's this tremendous anger of Hashem in the world. So the Arab turns to Hashem, Ribbono Shel Olam, Kula Alma Didochu, the whole world belongs to you, the Rabbi Bar Nachmeni Didoch, and Rabbi Bar Nachmeni is yours as well. At the Rabbi, you belong to Rabbi, the Rabbi Didoch, and Rabbi belongs to you because you are friends, you're closely connected, you and Rabbi. And my Kamachrif is Leila Alma. Why are you destroying your world? Because why are you destroying your world? Because your friend Rabbi has passed away. In other words, in effect, what the guy is saying is, what the Arab is saying is, it wouldn't be bekavadik to you to destroy your world, and you've already promised you won't. Rabbah certainly wouldn't want it either, even to stick up for his covered. So Hashem, why are you doing that? Noch zafa, and Hashem listened to his tefillah, and the storm stopped. Okay. Now we go back to, so we began the sugya by talking about Reb Shimon Elazar catching thieves, which had to do with a pasuk that the Gemara had quoted on Pegimel Amud Beis. Afterwards, the Gemara had gone from one topic to another. It mentioned that Reb Shimon Elazar was very fat. Then it mentioned Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi also was, and it went on to talk about the physical size of various Amoraim, and therefore it led to one thing and another. We have the story of Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, and then more stories of Rabbi Shimon Elazar, and so forth, and we digressed from one topic to another. Now, getting back to Chachamim, who were fat, so the Gemara tells another story. Rabbi Shimon Chalafta, Baal Boser Hava, Rabbi Shimon Chalafta was fat, he was fleshy. One day he was feeling hot. Have a solid with Yosef Ashin in the Torah. So he went up and sat on the crest of a mountain, on the top of a mountain where it's cooler. Omalah the brate, and he tells his daughter, Biti, my daughter, Hanifi alive Manifa, fan me with a fan, Vani etim lichikr in the nerd, and I will give you bundles of nerd. Nerd is a spice that we have in the Torah, Smorok Tzia Shibolas Nerd Macharakim. So he promises he's going to give her bundles of that spice as a reward for fanning him. The Pashtos, she's a Kala Maidon, and she can use them for her Kala perfumes, whatever it is, anyway. Adahochi Noshva Zika, as he was talking, a wind started blowing, and that pulled him off. Omar, he says, Kama Kikrin de Nerd, Lamori Dichi, imagine how many bundles of nerd, of this expensive spice, I would owe to the master of this. In other words, he's expressing with that his gratitude to Hashem, rather than needing to be fanned. Hashem himself came and gave him a natural fan and gave him the wind for a fan, and look how much I owe Hashem for that. There's a very interesting explanation from Reb Nochum Chernobler that's printed in one of his Sfarim that says a deeper idea behind this story. It says Baal Boser doesn't just refer to somebody who's fat and fleshy. It means somebody who's able to overcome. He's the Baal, he's the master over his Boser, his Gashmius. The other Amiroyim that we learned before on Daf Pei Dalet were of that caliber. So is Reb Shimon Chalafta. So now he's hot, he's heated up with a tremendous outpouring of Ava for Hashem, and he's going up, therefore, to the top of a mountain where he can be on a higher level and be able to do much more Avodas Abirurim. So he asks his daughter, Hanifi Alib Manifa, which means not only fan me, the word Manifa also means lift me up, like tnufa that you do with a korban, where you lift it and wave it in all directions. So lift me up even further so I can do that. And then I'll give you kicker in the nerd, and I'll give you all of the treasure, the wealth of sparks of Kedusha that I'm going to extract with all of that. And then the wind blows, and he's able to do that. And he's so grateful to Hashem. Kama kicker in the nerd, l'mori dichi. I shouldn't take credit for any of that avodas habirurim I did myself. The credit goes entirely to Hashem, who put me in a position to be able to do that. The Gemara says, we said in the Mishnah, Kol Kaminig Amadina Bechola. We said the Mishnah had said that a person hires workers and he tells them that he's gonna the Mishnah had said, where if it's a place where the boss normally supplies the workers with food, then he has to supply them with whatever kind of food is normal for that place. Hakol Kaminig Amadina, everything according to the custom, to the local custom. So the Gemara says, Hakol Lasur Yamai, what does that Hakol come to include? And the answer is La Astra, but Astra de Nehigi Michrach Richter. There are places where they have the minhag that they wrap bread, meaning they give the workers time to eat bread together with something wrapped inside it, to give it a flavor, or Mishta Napka, and where they drink a revius of wine. So that's the normal kind of thing that you offer them. The Omalahu, now if he tells them, Pidimu Vaisulahu, I want you to come early. Like this, normally you would only have to come at a netzachama, as we learned on Pei Gimel on the base. Instead, you come early, and I'll give you the food and drink. That way, you'll be able to eat and drink before Netz, and you'll be able to start working immediately at Netz. Omruloi, they can tell them, Loi kol kminach, you don't have the ability to do that. Since the normal thing is the workers only need to, since the workers need to come and start work only at Netzachama, the time that you're giving us, the time you're giving us to eat has to be part of that. So we'll eat at Netzachama, and then we'll start working. Then that's one girsa that Tosfos brings. Then Tosfos brings another girsa that they would be eating normally in the Bala boss's house before they start the work. If he tells them, never mind eating in my house, let's go. You'll go start working in the field, and later on, I'll bring you later on the food and the drink. And they can tell him that, no, the minigam din is that we eat in your house, then and we insist on our rights to do that. And therefore, you can't tell them differently because I call them in a gamadin. Okay. Now, the Mishnah had said, "Meister Rabbi Yochanan Masia Shamal of Night Seus Schor V'Cholah." The Rabbi Yochanan Masia one time told his son to hire workers, and the son tells them, "My father is going to provide you with food." And afterwards, Rabbi Yochanan Masia tells him, "You shouldn't have told them that because now we could be on the hook even for greater than Sudas Shloim of Ashaita, because these Jews are Bnei Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, and therefore they have to be treated like royal." So the Gemara says, Maisa Lister, are we bringing up a story in the Mishnah to disprove, to contradict what we said before? We just said, I call Kamina Gamadina. The Minna Gamadina is obviously that you don't give them to Sudas Shloim of Ashaita or more. So why is Rabbi Yechim Ben Masiyah saying that we're going to be on the hook for that? The answer is, Chasurim Mechsur. The Mishnah is missing a phrase. Well, Hachi Kutani, it means to say like this. Now, when we say "pork minigam dinner," is if he didn't tell them one way or the other about the food, and therefore we say it defaults to minigam dinner. But if he tells them, "I'm going to supply you with food," ribolahen, then it means he's adding to them more than normal, because otherwise he wouldn't have had to mention it in the first place. So, Rabbi Yechanan Masia, and that's borne out by the story of Rabbi Yechanan Masia. Sha'omel of night say scholon apoyalim. He tells his son, "Go hire us workers." Holoch pasuk land mizonis, and the son goes and tells them that he's going to supply them with food. And now shaboy tzalavi, when he comes to his father, omelay bni afila ata oislen the sudas shloim b'shaite. Now that you told them you're going to give them food, and that means we're not limited to minigam adina anymore. Now we have to give them more food. And the fact is, they're Jews. So even if you give them as much as Shloima had for his meals in his good times when he was king, meaning before Ashmedai kicked him off the throne, lo yatsasi yedei chevascha imohen, you still wouldn't fulfill your full obligation with them, shein b'nei Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, because they're children of Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, and Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov served their guests even greater meals than Shloima served his guests. So therefore, then he continues in the Mishnah that before they start work, tell them that we're only responsible to give them bread and beans. So they want to ask the member the Sudasa that Avraham Avinu adifim in the Shloima. You're telling me the Suda that Avraham Avinu gave his guests, the three Malachim, is greater than Shloima's Suda? V'hoksiv. The pasuk describes Shloima's Suda. Vayhi lechem Shloima liyemechad. Shloima's food for one single day was shloshim kur solas, 30 kur of fine flour. A kur is it's a measure of volume, technically, we learned earlier, but translated into weight, it would be somewhere around 500 pounds. And then this is 30 times that. Vishishim kur komach, and 60 kur of regular flour. Then asora boker briim, 10 fat cattle. Briim means healthy, but in psukim it also often means fat. Actually, it says in the pasuk, "Ve'esrim bokarii," and 20 cattle that graze in the fields, "Umeyatzon," and 100 sheep, "Levad me ayol tzvi v'yachmur," besides for ayol tzvi and yachmur, which are three of the types of kosher wild animals that are listed in Parashas Re'eh, "Ubarburim avusim," and stuffed barburim, which in modern Hebrew, barburim means swans, but Rashi translates it over here, it means chicken, as we're going to see soon in the Gemara. Anyway, so that was all Shloima's food for one day, and that wasn't even all. But Omer Gurion bar Astian Mishmei de Rav, Gurion bar Astian says in the name of Rav, all of this flour that we're talking about, all this 30 kor of fine flour and 60 kor of regular flour, is halolulam milon shatabachi. All of that is only used for the dough that the cooks use to cover the pot. We find in a few places in Shas, when they were cooking a pot full of food, they would want something to absorb all the froth and all the scum that floats to the top of the pot. And so they would put over it a covering of dough, and that would absorb that. So all of that flour was just to make that dough for that. Imagine how much flour was for the actual bread and cakes and whatever that they had. And Rabbi Yitzchak says, as far as all the meat that it mentioned, was only for tzikek deira, only things to flavor the food with. And then the actual amount of food was far, far greater than that. And on top of that, we know that Shlomo had 1,000 wives, 700 noble wives, 300 palagshim. Every single one of these wives every day would make the amounts that are mentioned in the pasuk. My time, why? Each one is thinking, today Shlomo may dine by me, and therefore I have to be ready with a full meal over there. Agav, then, you know, it comes out that it means that every day 999 of them are disappointed. You know, when we have in the psukim over there that eventually in Shlomo's old age, his wives started worshiping Avodah Zarah and he didn't prevent them, that may have to do with this. Maybe they were trying to regain Shlomo's attention in that negative way. Anyway, so the point is, so in Shlomo's kingdom, Sudas Shlomo B'Shaite is an enormous amount of food every day. How does Avraham Avinu compare to that? The Ilul Gabi Avraham, when it comes to Avraham and the Malachim. See, the pasuk says, "Vela boker rots Avraham." Avraham ran to the cattle. Vayikach ben boker rach v'toy. He took a tender and good calf. The omer of Yehuda by omer Rav ben boker echad rach shnayim v'toy shloisha means that altogether it wasn't one animal; it was three. The word ben boker means one animal. Rach means a second one, and toy means a third one, as the Gemara explains further down on the omer how we know that. In any case, it means he only prepared three animals, so shloisha. So there's only three animals. So how does that begin to compare with Sodas Shlomo B'Shaita? And the Gemara answer is Hosim Tlosa Todi Latlosa Gavri. The difference is there he's preparing three calves for three people. Each one is being given a whole calf. Hocha, when it comes to Shlomo, yes, there was an enormous amount of food, but L'chol Yisrael Yehuda, you have to consider the number of diners. It was for the whole Jewish people, the 10 Shvatim and Yehuda. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Yehuda v'Yisrael Ram Kachol Asher Ala Yom L'Roiv. The Jewish people at that time were as numerous as the sand on the sea. Uchlam v'shotzim v'smeichem. The pasuk finishes off. So therefore, so now, fine, not all of them are eating at Shlomo's table. But certainly you have, compared to such a numerous people, if nothing else, there must have been many ministers and noblemen and whatever, and people who are coming to visit Shlomo for one reason or another who are eating over there. So in other words, per person, it comes out that Shlomo is serving them less food than Avraham served his guests. Therefore, Rabbi Yochanan ben Masya can say to his son that compared to the fact that these workers are Bnei Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov, to serve them even Sudas Shlomo b'Shaita would be inadequate because Avraham proportionately served his guests more. So now, the Gemara asks, before we get to Avraham Avinu, the Gemara says, "My barburim avusim." When we said everything else in the pasuk, we understood what it is. But what are barburim avusim? Omer Rav, sha'ovsim oisim bal kocham. So Rav says these are chickens that they would stuff them against their will. They would force feed them in order to make them fat. Or Shmuel amar sha'avusim ba'onim eileim. Shmuel says they would naturally, on their own, eat so much that they would become fat. Maharsha explains basically the machlokas is which one is healthier. Either way, they're going to be fat, but Shmuel holds it would be healthier if they eat a lot naturally on their own rather than you force feed them. Rabbi Yochanan says that this is how they did it. Mevin termim arisay, as far as the oxen, they would bring them from their pasture. Vidaloi onis, they had never made the animal work, so therefore it has its full strength. Vitanagola smash bossa, the chicken had been pecking around in the garbage heap, as chickens do. Vidaloi onisa, it had never been made to do work, namely to lay eggs and raise chickens. And now those would be the ones, those would be the animals that they now stuffed, and those would be the ones that they'd present to Shlomo's table. Meaning, in other words, Maharsha says that Rabbi Yochanan would understand that the Avusim goes on everything else in the Pasuk, not just on the Barburim, but on everything in the Pasuk before it. Omer Amema, so Amema gives another explanation. Barburim Avusim, Zagsa Uchmasa, it means a black hen, Bebotnissa, that has a big stomach, Or Rashi brings a second girsa, Beit Potnisa, which means that actually Rashi's first girsa is Potnisa, which means Maloshin Potam, that they stuffed it, that they force fed it in the house. And the other is Botnisa, that it has a big stomach. The Mishtach Habena Atzri, you can find such a bird, you can find such a black chicken among the wine presses, and it eats the seeds over there, so it becomes very fat on them. Dolematia, Pasia Kanya, eventually it becomes so fat that it can't even step over a stick because it's so fat and its stomach hangs down so much. So those are the kinds of chickens that they would serve by Shloima's table. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to go into a discussion about Avram Avinu's Hachnasas Orchim. The pasuk says, "V'al Boko Rotz Avram," that Avram ran to the cattle to get animals to feed his guests. So the pasuk says that he took Ben Boker Rach Batoiv. So as we said before, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, Ben Boker Echo, the word Ben Boker means one animal, Rach Shnaim, when it says Rach means it was a second animal, Batoiv means Shloisha, means it was a third animal, so he served them three animals, as the Gemara is going to explain later on why. So the Gemara says, Ve'emachad, why, maybe it just means one, Rach Batoiv, are descriptions of the animal that it was tender and it was good. And the answer is, after all, people regularly say about an animal that it is tender and it's good. So the Gemara says, then the Pasuk would have said that he brought a Ben Boker that is Rach Toy. My Botoy, why does it say with the Bob? Shmam another Durasha, that means that it was extra. So the Gemara says, Ematrei. Okay, so that means there were two animals. No, midim toiv la derasha. Since the word toiv comes for a derasha, rach nami la derasha, then we understand that the word rach is also coming for a derasha, and it means, in other words, that's not. And Marsho adds, people don't say ben bakar rach alone. People say rach toiv. So once we say that toiv is for the derasha, we wouldn't say, nobody would say ben bakar rach alone, and therefore it would mean that the word rach is also there for the derasha, and therefore altogether it means that there were three animals. So the Gemara says, Mosiv Rabba Ola, V'temer of Hoshia, V'temer of Nosin Bar Hoshia. So three different Amoroim asked the question. The Pasuk continues, Vayitin on Nar, he gave the animal to the boy, which is Yishmael, to prepare, Vayimaher Lases Oisoi, and he hurried up to make it, which implies that there's only one animal. And the Gemara says it means Kochad Bachad, Yavin the Nar Chad. Means each animal, each of the three calves he gave to a different boy to prepare, so this one it would be done as fast as possible. So the Gemara says, what about, it says, Vayika chema v'cholav, he brought cream and milk, uvena bokar asha osa, and the calf that he had prepared, implying that there was only one calf, Vayitin lifneim, and he put it in front of them. The Gemara answers, to kama kama dematia, as each one was ready, aisa v'kamayu, he brought it in front of them. So in the end, there were three, but he wanted to serve them as fast as possible. So therefore, as soon as each one was ready, and we see in the psukim of they was rushing to get everything done. So as soon as each one is done, then he did it. Marsha points out the previous thing. We can't say that he gave them one at a time to the Nair, because there'd be no reason to mention that. Adrabah, he wants to do it as fast as possible. So here it makes more sense to say that each one he brought to them first. So the Gemara asks, "V'lomali tlosa?" So why does he need three animals? Tiski b'chad, one animal should be enough to serve three people. And the answer is, "Amar of Chanan bar Rava, k'dei la'achil and shalosh l'shonis b'chavol," to feed them, because he wanted to feed them three tongues with mustard, which is a delicacy. And since each animal has only one tongue, so therefore he needed three animals. So we see that Avraham was very generous with his guests, even more, we're saying proportionally, or per person, even more than Shloima was with his guests. And the Gemara will continue, which we'll learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, about the continuation of the story with many different drushes about Avraham and his guests.